1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Marcus Theaters. Safety and well-being of guests and associates are top priority. Temporarily closing was the right thing to do, and when timing is right, the movie experience will return. Updates at MarcusTheaters.com.
Let's talk some music news with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good afternoon. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, it's getting to be like that, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, I can still tell.
I think it's what day it is. What day is it?
Morning from afternoon, even if I can't tell one day from another.
I have no excuse for that one. Hey, Gary, Dan Rather has started up a new season of The Big Interview. Now, I don't know if it's an abbreviated season because of what's going on.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty full season. They had just about everything in the can.
Kicked off with Huey Lewis this week.
Yeah.
What's the percentage of musicians he interviews on that show? Is it
most,
a lot?
I mean, I think his big interviews are, I think, like 95% musicians.
Yeah, he'll have an actor from time to time.
From time to time, but no, it's music. And, you know, I think this is a – I mean, I think he's probably a music fan, but, you know, I don't know if he was out there in 1984 jamming to the heart of rock and roll or not. But you know, he has a really strong production team.
Huey is incredibly interesting.
Oh yeah,
he is a fascinating individual.
He's had a life well beyond what most people know him for, and everything that led up to him being the Huey Lewis we know and for most of us love. You know, there's so much before that. His family, he has a really interesting family history. You know, he's a prep school boy. You know, of a sort.
He's from California. His parents sent him to prep school out in the East Coast and never came to see him. Not once, he said.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. He said, they never came out to see me.
Yeah.
It was the other side of the country. It was the mid-60s at that time.
Right.
You know, and we were raising tougher children then.
What about his hippie mom?
He even said my mom was like the
hippie literary type.
He said my mom was one of the first hippies.
Yeah.
Wouldn't she come out and, I mean, wouldn't a hippie mom do that?
You would think that would be, but you know, as you noted, you know, in the mid-60s, you know, traveling cross-country wasn't something you did a lot.
The hippies were still trying to dial it in as to what they stood for exactly.
I think for a hippie mom, your son becoming a musician would be as good as it gets.
But there's two things that stand out from that Huey interview with Dan Rather. One, he scored a perfect 800 on the math portion of his SATs, right?
Right.
A perfect 800, which he is very proud of. He said to Dan Rather, oh, no, it was an 800, Dan.
Yeah.
It was perfect. And then Dan says to him, how'd you do on the rest? He goes, it wasn't nearly, the rest were not nearly that good, which he says, laughing. And then when Dan asked him about his regrets and he talked about the Coca-Cola deal that they turned down.
Yeah.
They were offered, Coke wanted to use the heart of rock and roll, offered him a ton of money, but nobody was doing corporate sponsorships at that time, right?
He had told me that story, and, you know, that it's funny that happened. It was within weeks of when everybody started doing ads again. I mean, they turned it down, and they turned down Coca-Cola, and then all of a sudden, you know, came Michael Jackson, Genesis, Robert Plant, Eric Clapton, Steve Winwood.
I don't remember who got Revlon as a sponsor, but I remember it sponsored their tour, and that was
Or are you thinking the Rolling Stones and Jovan?
Maybe
That was the 81.
And I remember thinking, wait, what? Is that what's going to be hanging in the back of the stage
Coke,
was the big one.
Who did Coke grab after that?
That was the one that broke the proverbial cherry, was the Stones Jovan deal. There had been some small deals before that, mostly with, I guess, what we call related companies. You know, Pioneer Audio, I remember, did some, you know, music sponsorships and things like that, Techniques and all that. But then, you know, Jovan, the Rolling Stones with Jovan in 81 was the first of the big money, high profile, you know, yes, we have a corporate sponsor deal.
Would Huey have been hooked into shilling for New Coke then? Was that about the same time?
I don't remember the time.
At that time, it might have been.
And who did they go out and get then? Because all I remember is Bill Cosby talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of, that might have been where they went. I forget the history of that whole deal. But, you know, and listen, they were probably working Cosby at the same time, too.
But Huey was as good as I had hoped he would be. It's not one of those you tune into. I was waiting to see Huey, and he was up to the task. He did not disappoint.
one thing to know about shows like that is when the artist agrees to do a high profile, you know, network or TV big interview series like that, they have an agenda. They know what they want to say. They know how they want to portray themselves, and they have whatever reasons they have for it. You know, in Huey's case, he does have a new album, but I think he's also, and you know, you guys, you know, having spoken to him and everything too, you know this. He's kind of coming to grips with his current life situation. So I think it was important for him to do an interview like this.
Okay, here's another thing I didn't know. His right ear has given him this trouble for the last 35 years.
Right, yeah.
When his left ear gave out that it was like, well, now I'm done.
Yeah, he started to notice it in the 80s, and he's been deaf in one ear for, you know, more than two decades.
Yeah.
Which that was the one that always surprised me, was just, okay, how do you do that? But there are apparently a lot of musicians doing that.
I don't know if I like him more now that I've seen that interview, but it was interesting. It's like,
he's such a likable guy.
He's never been to rehab or anything like that, right?
Nope, never had to.
He's just been a guy who enjoyed sports and hanging out with his buddies.
Exactly.
So, all right, here's another thing. The Wonders. Now people are going, who are the Wonders? They're getting back together. They're reuniting.
They're going to do that thing they do, as it were.
From the movie,
That Thing You Do. These are the actors who were the band.
Right. Let's see.
That were, you know, they were the Wonders, originally known as the Oneaters.
Oneaters, right.
So actually, they were the Wonders, but, you know, the joke was
right.
When they spelled it.
Like the Beatles. No,
right.
The Oneaters.
Right. So they decided to, you know, they're going to raise money for the Music Cares coronavirus relief effort to help musicians and people in the music industry who are in need now. And this is essentially a dedication to Adam Schlesinger, the Fountains of Wayne, the guy who wrote the song That Thing You Do and a couple other things from the movie. And he passed away from coronavirus a couple weeks ago. So, this, you know, this brought them together. You know, Tom Hanks was one of the co-producers of the movie. He and Rita Wilson were in it. We're expecting to see them at some point during this webcast. It's tomorrow. I'm sorry, it's tonight at, I believe, 6 o'clock on their YouTube.
Is Big Boss Koss going to bring him on?
Wouldn't that be great?
Am I smooth? You know,
or the guy who played, who was the singer for Mr. Downtown.
Yeah,
I forget what they called him. Frank, he was the guy to play on.
Got the cast right, you know, here, Mister.
On Dion or somebody, but Frankie. Yeah.
Who was the guy from the record company? Saul.
I think. Did he have a last name?
Yeah, he did.
Wasn't it Saul Platt or Saul Pye or something like that?
I can't. It was a. It's a great movie.
Oh yeah, it's fun. It's a whole lot of fun.
Is it a love story? It's a love story, right?
Yeah, it's a love story.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a comedy too, and yeah, it was really well written, and you had.
But there's that heartbreaking moment when Liv Tyler realizes that her boyfriend is a douchebag.
Right, and yeah. But then that you had to have that so that then she would, she'd give the drummer some, as it were.
Yeah. Right. And like Jackson Browne told us, the drummer swept that girl away.
There you go. Saul Seiler.
Right. Who was also Mo Green in The Godfather.
Yes.
Alex Rocco played Mo Green.
I'm not sure I'm going to find out if he's with us or not.
What a versatile actor that guy is.
He is 79. He's
not with us anymore. Passed away in 2015.
Yeah. 2015? Okay.
All right. Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, so it'll be fun to see. I mean, the interesting thing was these guys did not play in the movie. I mean, you know, they were actors portraying a band, so let's see what happens when they actually...
Right, so who's going to, you know, fake their voices?
Well, I'll ask you this, Gary. What music critic is going to pan them for raising money?
Oh, of course not. And we're going to have a ball with it.
Hey, your name came up during the week.
Uh-oh.
There is a homework assignment for a young fellow where he has to... listen to Eleanor Rigby, done by the Beatles and by Aretha Franklin, and then compare and contrast them. And I said, we should have Gary write a paragraph and submit it and see how the teacher grades it.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be.
So
the kid would probably get a better grade than I would.
And I said, I don't even know that I've ever heard Aretha Franklin's Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah, no, it's you know, you're not gonna take it over the Beatles, but you know, if you like to hear Aretha Moden vocalized, it's a fun, you know, it's a fun version of it.
Well, it's a homework assignment this week. Summerfest has rescheduled their first show?
Their first show. Sam Hunt, country singer, from June 26th to September 4th. He's actually rescheduled his whole tour. The question now is going to become, are these fall shows going to happen or not?
Right, because the next thing you have here is discussion this week about exactly when concerts will be back on.
There was a lot that went on this week. You had a variety of people talking about it. Ezekiel Manuel, a doctor, special advisor to the World Health Organization, you know, told the New York Times that we will not be seeing large mass gatherings like sporting events and concerts probably till fall 2021 at the earliest, until there's, you know, a vaccine, until there's treatment, until there's testing, and people can feel safe to go to venues like that. Meanwhile, you had the CEO of Live Nation went on CNBC earlier this week, and basically, I mean, reading between the lines, said that, you know, you can kiss the summer goodbye, and that the fall, you know, the fall is not at all a safe bet either. You know, that really, you know, and so much of this is going to, and, you know, there are so many reasons for it, like I just mentioned with the guy from the WHO, you know, vaccine, testing, you know, being able to screen people as they enter venues and what that's going to look like and how that's going to work.
Well, eventually the government is going to loosen this up, and then everyone's going to kind of be responsible for themselves. Have you been vaccinated? You
know,
and you're going to kind of have to figure this out for yourself, right? If you're going to go back out in public into big gatherings.
That's the conventional wisdom, you know, but we'll see how long it takes to reach that point. And in the case of something like concerts, where it's a touring industry, you know, if you have four states that are open, you know, and having concerts, and, you know, 46 that aren't, or, you know, it's going to be tough to put a tour together and go from one place to the other. And then, like I think we said last week, you have factors like, when is the audience going to be comfortable being in a big group of people again? And even when they are, who's going to have the money?
Well, here's the upside. If you're willing to take a chance, you might be able to get a pretty good seat pretty cheap for these first few concerts that pop up.
This is entirely possible. Yes, and, you know, so it's going to be an incredibly complex comeback, you know, for society in general, obviously, but for the music and entertainment industry. One thing that did happen this week was that Ticketmaster, as well as the promoters, AEG and Live Nation, did loosen up their conditions for refunds. You know, now they're doing, not only are they giving you instant refunds for things that are canceled, but when things are rescheduled, they're giving you an entire year, basically up to the day before the rescheduled event, to get a refund on your ticket if you can't or don't want to go to the rescheduled date. What they're still doing, however, is holding on to money for shows that have not been rescheduled. So if you're holding on to a Rolling Stones ticket, let's say, you know, they haven't rescheduled that tour, so nobody's going to give you a refund on that yet.
So sit tight.
Sit tight, exactly. Bon Jovi, by the way, is the latest big act to postpone everything, including an album that was supposed to come out May 15th, as well as a summer tour. That's all on hold right now and will be rescheduled at a later date.
Eddie Money's, what he had going on in the studio, that gets released today on an album?
Yeah, that's what we're told is the last Eddie Money album. It's called Brand New Day. Came out today digitally. First new album since 1999, and it's got 11 songs that were in, I guess, various stages of completion, though mostly apparently complete, you know, and then ready to put out. So you can get 11 tickets to Musical Paradise today if you're an Eddie Money fan.
So Sting is doing a residency in Las Vegas.
He is. He is, and
was,
he will at
is.
Some point. He has pushed it back until the latter part of August. You know, it was going to take place this month. And so he starts August 15th with a bunch of shows, finishing up September 2nd. You know, that is assuming that Las Vegas is open again at that point.
Yeah, usually.
Buckingham has also rescheduled his spring tour. He's now scheduled to start July 31st in St. Louis. I think that's incredibly optimistic.
Don't they usually set you up for a year on those Las Vegas residencies? They don't.
Well, they sign a contract. They do like a week or so, maybe four or five times a year.
All right.
So you get to leave your stuff there. Here, just leave this here. I'll be back.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, if you're doing something like, let's say, in August, and then you're not back again until October or November, you're taking your stuff with you.
Yeah,
It's not like Celine Dion and Elton John when they set up a production that was there for months on end.
It was Freddie Fredrickson who sang Mr. Downtown.
That's right. Very good.
Yeah, played by Robert Twerken.
That sounded kind of like a spy song. Like it was for James Bond. Yeah, Mr. Downtown.
Oh, yeah. It was obvious. It was a takeoff on that. And, we all love the jazz of Del Paxton. So.
Right. It's a great movie. It really is a must-see.
What the hell are these guys going on about?
Here, I have a question. They auctioned off the handwritten lyrics to Hey Jude this week, right?
They did.
So they auctioned them off. Who had them to auction off? I mean, who was the owner of them up until?
They did not. Both the buyer and seller were apparently anonymous on this one. So whoever had them was anonymous, and then an anonymous buyer paid $910,000 for it. So I thank you guys again for that, in advance for my birthday gift.
Yeah,
very.
I will cherish these, and I can't say enough about your generosity. That was
sure.
A good auction, though.
No problem.
Julian Auctions did it. At the beginning of the week, other stuff that was sold, a bass drum head that Ringo Starr used during the first North American tour for $200,000, a John Lennon Bagism sketch, which sold for $93,750. A script from the Hello Goodbye promo film that sold for $83,000.
So. Now, this is going to change depending on how old you are, but I would think that the handwritten lyrics to Hey Jude are kind of the holy grail when it comes to collecting rock and roll memorabilia, right?
Does it have words scratched out?
I think most any Beatles lyrics and certainly any of the handwritten lyrics from their hits are a grail. Bob Dylan lyrics, Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, Irving Berlin, any of that in the actual handwriting of the composer, are definitely, things you would want to have and cherish if you could afford them.
Right, exactly. What is your thing? What is your holy grail? Like, that is the, if I could have one musical thing, piece, of history, what would it be?
I would want one of James Jamerson Jr.'s Fender basses that he used at Motown when he was, the Motown's primary bass player during the heyday, and I would just love to have the bass he played. Not that I would play it anywhere near that, like that.
Right, but you'd still strum on it, wouldn't you?
To think about what that instrument was on and the whose presence it was in, and just the fact that James Jamerson's DNA.
How many hit songs was that bass played on, do you think?
Oh, probably, 100 or more.
100 or more. But Lee Sklar has played on more albums as a bass player than... He's like the
Scary's
most...
Scary's choice.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No,
you want Lee Sklar's guitar?
No, he's a bass player. Lee Sklar is a bass player. So, all right. Very good, Gary.
Lee, by the way, is doing some great social media stuff with his dog, with his basset hound.
Okay.
So you might want to, while you're staying at home and looking for things, Lee Sklar and Company is a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'll check him out. All right, Gary, we're out of time.
All right, we will talk next week.
All right. Good run. Thanks.